We're beginning here on the top of Mem Aleph and Aleph with the statement of Ula. Ula is coming to qualify something that we saw in the Mishnah yesterday, and that was the machlok between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim. Over there, Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim argue about which bracha is given precedence in a situation. Rabbi Yehuda says that the hierarchy is determined by whether it's one of the Shivat
HaMinim. If it's one of the seven species that Eretz Yisrael's Nishtab Chabahen, that are special for Eretz Yisrael, that are mentioned in the Pasuk and Parshat Ekev, then they get precedence in terms of bracha. It has to do with the personal
preference
or personal desires of the individual, whichever one he likes better. The poskim, the rishonim, in dealing with this concept of whichever one you like better, is not something where at that moment you prefer something, but rather it's in normal situations, or when you're presented with these choices over and over again, which one would you prefer? It's a long-term decision about what you like, not a short-term, at this moment, I prefer this item. So there's a machloket in the Mishnah between the Chachamim who say, Chaviv, there's a subjective nature to which bracha you pick first, versus Rabbi Yehuda who sets out some objective standard that it's from the Shivat HaMinim, then that's what determines. Now, Ula comes to define where the machloket is. Ama Ula. Machloket b'shebirkotehem shavot. The only time that there is this machlok between the Yehuda and the Chachamim is when we're dealing with the same bracha, the same level of bracha, and now you have a choice. So for instance, we're dealing with, you have grapes and oranges. So both of those are bari priya eitz. In that instance, you have a machlok between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim, which one to give precedence to. Should I give precedence to the grapes because they're found in the pasuk of the Shivat HaMinim? Or do I give precedence to the oranges because I like oranges better? Rabbi Yehuda savor min Shiva adif. Rabbi Yehuda give precedence to one of the Shivat HaMinim. Rabbanan savor min Chaviv adif. The one that you like better is the one that you give precedence to. Aval b'she'en birkotehem shavot. Their brachot are not equal. For instance, you have a borei meim izanot versus a borei priya eitz. Or you have a borei priya eitz versus a borei priya adama. Divrei akol. In that instance, mivarech azeh v'chozer mivarech azeh. It's clear that you have to make a bracha on one and then a bracha on the other. Now, both Rashi and Tosafot discussing this point out, you make one bracha and then you have to make the other bracha. For instance, if you had carrots and you were also having a fruit. The Mishnah told us that if you make a bari priya adaman of fruit, you are yotzei with that bracha. That is only bidiyevet. That is, if by accident you made a bracha on an orange, and you said borei pri adama, you don't have to repeat the bracha. But that's not to say if you're having carrots and oranges, one is borei pri adama, the other one is borei pri eitz, that you should just make a borei pri adama on the carrots, and that will also qualify for the oranges. Nobody believes that. And when we say over here, mevrech hazeh, v'chozer mevrech hazeh, that means that we're going to separate out the brachot. Not that you're going to make a single bracha for the different items, but rather you're going to make a separate bracha on each item. Now, if your brachot are the same, then it's obvious that the borei priya eitz, like in our example before for the grapes and the oranges, whichever item you make the borei priya eitz on, will also qualify or discharge your obligation with regards to the other fruit. Our only question here is when she'ein birkatan shavot, when they are not equal to brachot, there everybody agrees that you have to make both brachot. Now, the question again becomes of precedence. The statement of Ula is somewhat unclear. It's ambiguous. It says, Divrei HaKol. The question is, when you say Divrei HaKol, who is agreeing to whom in that second part of the statement of Ula? In the first part, we have a Machloket Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim. In the second part, now, it says Divrei HaKol. Everybody agrees. Well, it'll be a difference. If everybody agrees, there'll be a difference between when everybody agrees to the position of Rabbi Yehuda, or if everybody agrees to the position of the Chachamim. So Tosafot quotes Rashi as saying that this is, everybody agrees to the position of the Chachamim. And he says that makes sense because you have a dat yochid, dat rabim, and we have an ambiguous statement, that it makes sense to go towards the rabim. And that, for that reason, we'll say that Rabbi Yehuda defers to the position of the Chachamim. That is the position of Rashi, the position of Tosafot. We're going to finish up the sugya, and just to note, I'm pointing out here along the way issues where poskim or rishonim could take a different position. And that will lead to us to the hierarchy of brachot that we'll lay out at the end of today's amud, which is what brachot go first in which situations. But here's the first of those issues, which is you have a machloket reviewed in the Chachamim. We know where their machloket is, but then we have an agreement between them in a case when ein birkotehem shavot. We just don't know whom agrees to whom. And that is Tosfot and Rashi both here believe that it's Rabbi Yehuda agreeing to the Chachamim. On the other hand, there are other Rishonim that believe that it means that the Chachamim agreed to Rabbi Yehuda's position in this case. Meitevei, hayu lefanav tznon v'zayit. He has a choice in front of him between a radish and an olive. A radish is a bari pri adama, a zayit an olive is a bari pri eitz. Mevarecha tznon, you make a bracha on the radish, upoteret a zayit, and that discharges the obligation with regards to the olive. So hachu v'mayaskinan, what is the case here? Because it can't be that you make a bracha of Borei Pri Adonai and that covers the Zayit, because we just discussed before that when you have different brachot like that, you can't have one discharge the obligation for the other. You have to make a separate bracha on each item. So it must be that a tznon ikar, that the tznon, the radish, is the major item that you're trying to eat. So for instance, you're eating radishes, they're a little sharp, so you want to temper that sharpness, so you eat olives to temper that sharpness. So the olives are all secondary to the radishes. Ihachi ema seifa. And what are you going to do with the latter half of that bright that we just quoted? Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Varechal Azayit, Azayit Min Shiva. Make a bracha on the olive because the olive is from the Shiva that we mean. Lately, the Rabbi Yehuda had it not. Rabbi Yehuda does not subscribe to what we're going to see in the Mishnah, Poshu Ikar, Vimot Fela. Whenever you have a primary item that you're eating, and then there's something that is secondary to it, Mivarechal Ikar, Boteret Fela. Make a bracha on the primary item, and the secondary item is drawn along with it. Okay, maybe Rabbi Yehuda does not subscribe to that position in the Mishnah. But Tanya, we have an explicit braita that says Rabbi Yehuda does subscribe to it. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, imach matznon bahazayit. If the only reason he's eating the olives is because of the radish, then he makes a bracha on the radish, and that discharges the obligation with regards to the olive, because the olive is all secondary here. So that means for sure Rabbi Yehuda subscribes to that principle. If you have a primary item and a secondary item, we only make the bracha on the primary item. If that's the case, how do we explain the machloka that is brought before, where the Tanakhama is saying you make a bracha on the radish, and Rabbi Yehuda is saying that you make a bracha on the zayit? The Gemara says, the olam, we have to say, bitznon ikar askinam. We're still dealing with a case where the radish is the primary item. When they argue about a different issue, nothing connected to this first statement of the Braita. But Surei Maxaron, the Braita is actually missing the transition word between the first case in the Braita and the machlokes between Rabbi Yehuda and Rechachamim. This is what it meant to say. He had in front of him both a radish and an olive. He makes the bracha on the radish, which is the primary item, and that discharges the obligation with regards to the olive. When is this true? That's when the radish is the primary item. If the radish is not the primary item, then everybody agrees you have to make separate brachot. One bracha on the radish and one bracha on the zayit. Now again, over here, when it says divrei akol, it's not clear what does that mean. Which goes first? Do you make the bracha on the radish if you like that better? Or do you have to make the bracha on the olive first because the olive is one of the Shivat Aminim? So again, when we have Divrei HaKol, it's the same ambiguity that we had before, which is, are the Chachamim agreeing to Rabbi Yehuda? Or is Rabbi Yehuda agreeing to the Chachamim? Ushnei Minim Ba'alma. And this is another case. You have two different types of fruits in general. Shebir Kotehem Shavot, that have equal bracha, orange and grapes. Yavarech Alizahem Mehen Shirtzeh. Whichever one he prefers, he takes first. So if he prefers oranges, he can take the orange first. If you don't marry, Yavarech Alizayit Shazayit Mimin Shiv'ah. Always make a bracha on the Shivat Aminim, because Shivat Aminim gets precedence. So if you have a choice between Borei Pri Eitz on Shivat Aminim and Borei Pri Eitz on something that's not Shivat Aminim, we're going to give objective precedence to the Shivat Aminim. So here again, we see this machlok between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim that revolves around Bishop Birkotehem Shavot, when their brachot are equal. So pligi by Rabbi Ami, Rabbi Yitzchok Napko. We have a machlok at Amoraim about how narrow the machlok between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim is. Chadamar machloket b'shibakotehem shavot. Machloket is when the brachot are equal. They're basically what we've said until now in the Gemara, which is when you have an equal bracha, that's where the machloket is. Rabbi Yehuda sever min shiva adif. Rabbi Yehuda gives precedence to the shivat aminim. Rabbanan sever min chaviv adif. And Rabbanan give precedence to the one that you like. Avoshayim b'shibakotehem shavot. When they don't have equal bracha, divyakom v'reichal zeh v'chozer m'v'yarichal zeh. You have to make separate brachot on them. Again, the same ambiguity about who degrees to whom, about what is the proper order in that case. The other Amara says, af b'shem b'kodem shavot nami machloket. Even when the brachot are not equal, they also have this machloket. And as Rashi points out, if Rabbi Yehuda believes when ein b'kodem shavot that the Shivat Aminim gets precedence, then certainly when the brachot is equal, that the Shivat Aminim will also get precedence. And that means that their machloket will persist both for ein b'kodem shavot and b'kodem shavot. Amara says, b'sh l'modamandamar b'shukodem shavot machloket shapir. According to one who says when the brachot are on equal plane, I understand what their machloket is about. We have the same bracha, and I have to determine how to give precedence inside of that bracha. I have to pick one item to do first. So is it Shivat Aminim, or is it the one that I like? I understand their machloket. Elamant amar be'ein b'kodem shavot pligei, who says they even argue when the brachot are not equal, but my pligei. Why is there an argument? We know what the hierarchy of brachot are. And there, why should there be any machloket about Shein Birkas Hayom Shavuot? What is it that is going to make us have to make a decision about hierarchy if we're dealing with different brachot? It's in order to which one to put first in the brachot. And that is, Damar Rav Yosef, the Itema Rav Yitzchak. You notice in our Gemara it says, Dih. That's a dalet, which connects it to the previous statement, which is that Rav Yosef, the Itema Rav Yitzchak said, Kol mukdam ba-pasuk zeh mukdam le-bracha. Anything that's earlier in the pasuk also gets an earlier bracha. In the pasuk of Eretz, Chita, Surah, Gefim, Teina, Rimon, all of those items that are listed there, whichever is earlier in the pasuk, that gets precedence in terms of bracha. Namar Eretz Kita Usura Gefim Tenua Rimon Eretz Zeit Shemen Udvash Uplige Di Rabbi Chanan. And this argues in Rabbi Chanan. Dam Rabbi Chanan Polo Pasuk Kulo Lishi Urim. This pasuk is really laid out because it gives us shiurim for the halacha, and it's not about precedence. It's about something totally different, which we'll get to in a second. Basically, what's laid out here is that the halacha is that the precedence of the bracha is going to be determined when Ein Birkas Hayom Shavuot, by which is earlier in the pasuk. I'm going to see later on in the Gemara. That's not only just in order of the pasuk, but it's way closer to the word Eretz in the pasuk. It means Eretz Kitav Sora, which are number 1 and 2. And then you also have Zeit Shemen Udivash. Zeit Shemen and Divash are also 1 and 2 after the word Eretz. First word Eretz gets precedence. And then the second word, Eretz, is after that. So then we'll see later on in the Gemara today that if it comes to a challenge between Dvash, Tamarim, and a Rimon, and a pomegranate, then Dvash, Tamarim will get precedence because Rimon is the fifth, whereas Dvash is second after the word Eretz, so it will get precedence. The question is, what is the halacha? First of all, I've just pointed out to you that there was a Dalid, De Amar of Yosef in the Gemara. Both Rashi and Tosafot have that girsa. Tosafot brings that there's an alternative girsa that does not have Dalid, but rather just says a new statement, an independent statement, Amar Rav Yosef. The reason to have that is because if you say the Amar Rav Yosef, that means this whole idea of precedence in the pasuk or being closer to the word Eretz is connected to Rabbi Yehuda's position. We're talking about here when the brachot are not equal. What does Rabbi Yehuda think about precedence of Shivat Aminim? And the answer is the Hakdim. Which one of the Shivat Aminim goes first based on the layout in the psukim? But that means that that whole halacha is only in the shita of Rabbi Yehuda. If you do not have a dalet there, and it's an independent statement, and Tosfot brings that from Rav Shmaya, that he has a girsa that was Amar Rav Yosef, and that it was an independent statement, and that means it applies both to the Rabbanon and to Rabbi Yehuda. Now, from all of this, we want to come to a conclusion about what is the hierarchy of brachot. So you should know that amongst the poskim, first of all, there's a machloket, whether we pass on like Rabbi Yehuda, or we pass on like the Chachamim. That's number one. Number two is, even if we pass in like the Chachamim or Rabbi Yehuda, we have to go back to what I just said before, which is the ambiguity and the breadth of Divrei HaKol. Who is admitting to whom in those situations? Even if you pass like the Chachamim or Rabbi Yehuda, you have to know who's admitting to whom when it comes to Be'ein Birkas Hayom Shavuot. And number three is, this statement of Rabbi Yosef, does it apply even if you do not hold like the position of Rabbi Yehuda? So the halacha, in terms of hierarchy, there are actually four ways to determine hierarchy of brachot. The first hierarchy is determined by the Pirut HaBracha. How specific the bracha is. The more specific the bracha is, the more precedence we're going to give to that bracha. How you determine narrowness, there are different ways to do it. The simplest way to explain it is, it covers the least amount of items. So a shahakol, which is the widest net of bracha, will be on the lowest on the totem pole. Hamotzi, which is the highest level of bracha, it's the most narrow bracha, that will get the first stage in terms of brachot. So in terms of that, you have the brachot of Hamotzi will be on top. Then there will be Borei Minei Zanot. After that will be Borei Pri Agafen, and Gefen will be after that. Then Borei Pri Eitz, then Borei Pri Adama, and then Shehakol. So that's the first set of hierarchy that matters in terms of determining which bracha you should make first. The second determination of which bracha should be made first is determined by the Shivat Aminim. Shivat Aminim get precedence, and even within the Shivat Aminim, the order in the pasuk matters. So that means if you have bread that's made out of wheat and bread that's made out of barley, we will give precedence to the bread made out of wheat over that which is made of barley because it's earlier in the pasuk of the Shivat Aminim. The third qualification that we use in terms of determining the brachot is whole versus cut. And we saw this earlier in the Gemara, that we will give precedence to something that's whole over something that's pieces or cut in half, even if the other item, the one that's cut, is better or bigger, whole takes precedence. That's the third thing. And the fourth thing is chaviv, that which you appreciate, that which you like better. So now all four of these will be the qualifications of how we determine hierarchy. The question comes up when you have a competition between different items. Now in terms of absolute hierarchy, the order of the brachot by Hamotzi, Mizonot, and Gafen it's pretty straightforward that those are the hierarchy of the brachot, and they will go in that order. Again, within the each one of those items, there might be within the pasuk something that is earlier than the other. We saw before about chita and sorah, bread of chita, bread of sorah. Or if you have different wines that you are tasting, if you make borei bragafen, you'll pick the one that you like best. And there, these are secondary determinations once we've made the first set of hierarchies. Now, the place that it matters, this machloket Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim really matters, is by borei priyayet. By borei priyayet, once I'm already making the bracha of borei priyayet, where do I give my precedence or priorities in making that bracha? Do I give it to the shivat aminim, or do I give it to chaviv? That's one. Number two is, there is a machloket amongst the Rishonim whether borei priyayet and borei priyayet adamah are considered to be separate brachot. Is really borei priyayet in the hierarchy above borei priyayet adamah or not? Obviously, if it's above, then it'll be no question if there's competition between hadamah and ha'etz, that ha'etz will go first. According to many of the Rishonim, Ha'etz and Hadama are in the same category, and that means that I will give precedence, even maybe to something that's Hadama, if I like it better, over something that's Ha'etz, because they are considered to be in the same circle or on the same level. So that's important. The last thing is, then, what is the halakha with regards to Chaviv versus Shivat Aminim? The Rambam says that Chaviv is the determining factor. The Shulchan Aruch brings down both opinions. One that the Shivat Aminim takes precedence, and the other one that Chaviv takes precedence. So he brings down both the halacha. It seems in general that we are noteya to the tzad of Chaviv, that when it's something that you like better, that will get precedence, even over Shivat Aminim. Again, even though it's a machloket all the way from the time of the Gaonim, basically down through the Rishonim, through the Psak Halacha, nevertheless, the Minag Olam is give precedence to that which is Chaviv over the Shivat Aminim. There are others, you can ask your Rav, that do give priority to Shivat Aminim, and Ma Tovu Ma Naim, if the thing that you like is also the Shivat Aminim, so you don't have to end up in this machloket. All right, now we're going to continue with Rabbi Hanan's statement, which is, Kol HaPasuk Kulo L'Shirim Ne'amar, that this pasuk was said for Shirim. And what does that mean? That means that there are halachic Shirim that come out of each of the items that are mentioned in the pasuk. Ne'amar Chita, we have the word Chita in the pasuk, Tetnan. Someone who enters into a house that has Sorat in it. When you enter into a house of Sorat, it has the equivalent of entering into a house that has a mate in it. It's mitame ba'ohel. As soon as you enter into it, you become tamei with the tumat of the Sorat because you entered into a house that had Sorat in it. So when you went, once you've entered in, right away you're tamei, just like if you walked into an ohel ha-mei. The kelav al-ktefav. If he walked in with some items on his shoulder, sandalav atabotav bi'adav, and he's carrying his shoes and his rings, hu behein tamei miyad. You and the items that you brought in there are tamei immediately as you enter. Elabush kelav v'sandalav biraglav. He's wearing his shoes on his feet, and he's wearing his clothing. V'tabutav etzvotav, and his ring is on his finger. Hu tamei miyad. He, the individual, when he walks in there, becomes tamei right away. V'hein torin, they are tahor ad sheyishehev gdei achilat pras, until he stays in the house the amount of time it takes to eat half a loaf of bread. A loaf of bread or a full lechem, according to the Gemara and Erevin and other places, is Mazon shtei seudot. It's enough for two meals. So chatzi pras is enough for a single meal. It's learned that from the psukim by Tzorat that you have to tarry in the house the amount of time it takes to eat a meal in order for the items, your clothing that is on you, to become tamei. How long must you tarry? So the Gemara says here, amount of time it takes to eat half a loaf, one seuda, and that is only if it's patchitim, it's bread made out of wheat, which is easier to eat than other grains. Velo patzorim, and not barley bread. Mesav, he's on his side laying down. Vochlan, beliftan, he's eating them together with something that goes along with the bread to make it easier to swallow. So that's the amount of time he has to be there. And the word chita here is teaching us that the qualification for the amount of time that one might spend there is based on a loaf that's made out of chita. Seora, when we're doing seora, it's the Tanan. We have a Mishnah. Etzem kit seora mitamei b'magal masav enu mitamei b'ohel. It's a halacha of the Moshe Mitzrayim that a bone the size of a barley seed is mitamei b'magal masav. If you come into contact with it or you carry it, you'll be tamei tumat amei. But if you are in an ohel with it, it does not have tumat ohel. Tumat ohel has a higher threshold in order to convey tumah. Etzem kisera does not meet that threshold. So therefore here, from the word seora, we learn out the din. Oh, the halacha of etzem kisora gefen
is kedei reviyat yain lenazir. Now Rashi and Tosafot both here discuss what that means. In terms of reviyat yain for the nazir is restricted from consuming grape products, and reviyat is the threshold by which he is violating that isur of consuming grape products. The machlok between Rashi and Tosafot is, why do you have to mention a reviyat by yain as opposed to a reviyat in general? We have Revi'it as a measurement of consumption of liquids. Why is Yayin here by the Naziris different than that white water? So Rashi says, well, a Revi'it of Yayin is not the same as a Revi'it of Mayim. Now that's interesting because it's a volumetric measure. And if it's a volumetric measure, then it should make no difference the density or the properties of the liquid that's in there, because they still have to take up the same volumetric measurement of a Revi'it. But Rashi says, water which is thinner and wine that is thicker actually have a different measurement of a Revi'it. What Rashi is most likely referring to is the fact that if we looked at it from a weight basis, wine would be greater than that of water because of the properties of wine as opposed to that of water. So that's why the Gemara has to specify here Yayin separately from Mayim. Tosafot, on the other hand, describes it differently and says that they are actually volumetrically different, and that is because of the surface tension. Water, which is thinner, falls over the top when you pour the water up to the top of the Revi'it, whereas wine, because of its density and its properties, even when you get it up to the top of the cup, it will hang on and its surface tension will be greater. And therefore, a Revi'it Yayin will actually be distinct or different than a Revi'it of Mayim.
Te'ena, a fig, teaches us, Kigoret lotzat Shabbat. Mishnah Shabbat tells us the amount of food that you must carry on Shabbat to be chayav is the size of a gugoret, a dried fig. Fig is the determining factor for carrying on Shabbat. It's the shiur for carrying on Shabbat. Foods, there are mishnayot in Shabbat that have specific shiurim for specific types of foods and other tanaim that argue. But the general principle is anything that's not covered by any other threshold or shiur, eteina, the gugoret is the determining size. Rimon. Rimon is used by the mishnayot by tuma, which is ketanan, kol klei balei abatim. Any kleim, any utensils that are home-based utensils, shiuran kerimonim. In order to no longer be functional, they have to have a hole in them that will allow a rimon to fall out of them. The Mishnah in Kelim discusses how a keli loses its shame kli. An item will only become tameh or mekabel tuma as long as it's classified as a kli. It loses its shame kli, it no longer will be tameh. So when does it lose its shame kli? Mishnayot there discuss the size of the hole that it has in it. And as the hole gets larger, what ends up happening is a person changes its utility. It was used for something before. When the hole comes into the kli, you move it over to utilize with bigger items. And so on and so forth until you reach the biggest item, which is a rimon. It's a pomegranate. So that's a very large item. If it has a hole that will not allow it to hold on to rimonim, then already even a balabite, even someone in their house, will discard that item because it's no longer usable. It no longer has any utility and it will not be tameh. So that's what rimon teaches us. Eret zeit shemen. What does that teach us about? Amar Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Chanina, Eretz Shekol Shiurei is Kizaitim. The land in which all of its shiurim are kizaitim, are like olive sizes. Kol Shiurei is Agadatzka. You think all of its shiurim are zaitim? We just had a whole bunch of them that are not a zait. Like Anach Damran, we just said a whole bunch that are not that way. Eretz Shirov Shiurei Kizaitim. Majority of shiurim in Eretz Yisrael are kizaitim, are like the size of an olive. Divash. What about honey? But this is Dvash, as Rashi pointed out, Dvash Shel Marim, we're talking about dates. That's Minyana Diyoma Kikotevet Agasa B'Yomei Kippurim. On Yom Kippur, we have a restriction against eating and drinking. That's because we have to be Me'uneh. We have to be Be'inui. We have to be afflicted. The Gemara in the 8th Perek of Yoma says, what is the counter to being afflicted? That's someone who enjoys or gets something that's satisfying. What is the size of consumption that one has to have in order to be not Me'uneh, not to be afflicted? Gemara says there, kikotevet agasa, like a fat date. If you consume that much food, that takes away the affliction of the day. And therefore, someone will be in violation of eating on Yom HaKippurim if they eat that amount of food. Vidach, what about the other opinion? These are all these shiurim. We need to know these shiurim. These are all halakhic shiurim. Where does he know them from? Hani shiurim behedja miktive. He says, wait a minute. First of all, even when you're reading from the pasuk, you're still learning out of the pasuk. It doesn't say, this is the threshold, this is the shiur for all of these items. He's just saying that this is the shevach of Eretz Yisrael, that those items that grow there are also used within the halachic realm. But that doesn't say it was explicit. It's a nice drasha, but it's not explicit in the pasuk. Ella, what's the case here? It's midrabanan kras maktabalma, that the rabbanan learning out of the pasuk, and the pasuk is just a nicha, a help to the chachamim to determine those shiurim, but not that it's a full-fledged limud. In other places in Shas, it says, Ella halacha lemoshim misinai, that really it's a Mesorah, it's a Kabbalah, Mi Sinai, and the Korah is just a smach, it's just a help to remember or to give us those fruits that are included on this Halacha L'Moshe Mi Sinai. But now that it's a full-fledged limud, if it's not a full-fledged limud, then the pasuk is still available to us to darshin the hakdama, the precedence when it comes to making brachot. If you have choices, again, if you have choices between wheat and barley, we'll opt for wheat. If you have choices between different fruits, we'll look in the pasuk to determine if they're from the Shivat Aminim, which one gets precedence. Rav Hamnuna, we're eating together. They brought before them dates and pomegranates. They hear something with the same bracha, bori brei, and they're both mishivata minim. Shalko Rav Hamnuna baracha tamrei. Rav Hamnuna went and grabbed the dates and made the bracha on it first. Bereisha. Amalei Rav Chista lo svir lei mar lahad amar Rav Yosef. You don't hold what Rav Yosef says, that you whatever is early in the pasuk, you make a bracha on first. Rimon is before Devash in the pasuk. That which Rav Yosef said, v'yitem Rav Yitzchak kol muktam b'pasuk zekor on the bracha. Amalei. Wait a minute, it has to do with how close you are to the word Eretz. Rimon is the fifth item after the first word Eretz. Devash is the second one after the second Eretz. Therefore, Devash will get precedence over Rimonim, over pomegranates here. Give us, I hope we had iron legs so that we can always be Meshameshu to hear these great words of Torah. This is such a great explanation. That I wish we were always Meshameshu to hear all this good Torah that you had. Itmar, Hevil Lefnehem Teinim Vanavim B'Tocha Suda. They brought before him dates and grapes in the middle of the meal. Now we're going to have a Machloket Amoraim, and then later we're going to have Rapapa give a more global approach to this. What I'm going to do at first is follow the way Rashi reads the Gemara, and then I'll come back and explain through Tosafot how he disagrees with Rashi or where he sees differences here. So they brought him figs or grapes in the middle of the Suda. Since they are not part of the meal, they are something that you don't normally eat with the meal. You'll have to make a bracha rishon on them, bari priyates, but you won't have to make a bracha chrona. That's covered by Birkat Hamazon. Rav Nachman agrees to this position of Rav Huna. Rav Sheshet Amar tunim bracha ben lifneihem, ben leachreihem. They require a bracha in front of them, as well as after them. There's a basic principle. It requires a bracha rishona. It requires a bracha achrona, its own bracha achrona. And therefore, it will not suffice to say Birkat Hamazon. We'll have to say ala eitz ve'ala priya eitz in order to be yotzei for a bracha achrona here. The only one that has exception to that rule is a pat haba b'kisnin bilvad. Pat haba b'kisnin is something that will be discussed in tomorrow's daf as well. I'll just point out here, Rashi's explanation of what pat haba b'kisnin is. It's a dough that is made with lots of spices in it. And it's also filled with nuts, shkedim and egozim, and has nuts inside of it, and you only eat small amounts of it. Rashi claims that the bracha rishona on a pat haba b'kisnin is borei minei mizanot. The bracha achrona is v'lo klum, borei nefashot. Nothing afterwards, similar to orez and dochan. The same din as borei minei mizanot in the beginning, and borei nefashot afterwards. And that's no matter when you have it, whether you have it during the meal, whether you have it after the meal, pat haba b'kisnin always has that set up in terms of bracha. Again, if it's in the meal, since you don't need to say Barayin HaFashel because it's loklum, you can be captured by Birkat Hamazon, be sufficed with Birkat Hamazon. That's Rashi's interpretation. Tosafot says, by Pat haba b'kisnin, if it's inside the Suda, I agree with Rashi, that it has a din where maybe you have to make a bracha rishona, but the bracha achrona is covered by Birkat Hamazon. But he says, outside of the meal, I disagree with Rashi. If you have Pat haba b'kisnin, it requires a Buryim Minei Mizanot before it, and an Ala Michya afterwards, not Velo Klum. This is where Tosafot and Rashi disagree about Pat haba b'kisnin outside of the context of a meal. Again, I'm going to leave over Pat haba b'kisnin to tomorrow's daf, where we'll spend more time on exactly what it is, and what the bracha is. Now, continuing in the Gemara, Upligi the Rabbi Chia. This argues, disagrees with Rabbi Chia, Dam Rabbi Chia, Pat Poteret Kol Minei Makal. Bread takes care of everything. Bread takes care of anything that is food, and therefore, pat haba b'kisnin, anything that you would eat during the meal, would be covered by the bracha of the pat. The yayin poter kol minei mishkim, and making a bracha on wine covers all drinks. Amar Rav Papa, now we have Rav Papa coming along and giving us hilchata. Hilchata, dvarim abayim machmada suda, betocha suda. Things that come for the suda, inside the suda, ain't to any bracha, lo lifnehem, velo l'achreihem. The way Rashi explains this is, something that comes, lafet behenet pat, something that's together with the bread, it accompanies the bread. Those items don't require a bracha rishona, nor a bracha achrona. Shalom machmada suda, if it's not because of the suda, betocha suda, if it's in the middle of the meal, tonim bracha lifneim, bein tonim bracha achreim. You need a bracha rishona, but not a bracha achrona. What Rashi defines as those items are things that do not accompany the pot directly, but things like daisa, kruv, tradin, vegetables, or farina, items that you eat during the meal, that are mazon. They're for nourishment. They're soveya. They satisfy. So therefore, birkat hamazon will suffice as a bracha achrona. But in terms of bracha rishona, they're not covered by pot because they're not malafet at the pot. They don't come directly to accompany the bread. The achar suda, Rashi claims that achar suda means things that you would normally eat after the suda. Our girsa in the Gemara says achar suda. If you look in Rashi, his girsa is dvarim habaim or regulim lavol achar suda. Things that normally come after the suda that you're eating during the meal. Of course, if you eat them after the meal, then you have to make a separate bracha. Question is, during the meal, if you eat things that normally are eaten after the meal, what's the din? Kagon, what's that like? Peirot, like fruits. Fruits that are normally eaten after the meal. If you happen to eat them in the middle of the meal, what is the din? Statement of a papa is, you need bracha ben lifneim, ben lachrayim. You need before and after, they need their own bracha. That is the way Rashi reads this Gemara. So suppose this reads the Rashi on a number of points here. The one of them is the definition of what is considered to be machmada suda and shalom machmada suda. Something that comes because of the meal and something that comes not because of the meal. Rashi defined that as something that's directly melafet at the pot and something that's not directly melafet at the pot. On the other hand, Tosafot says that's not the case. Anything that's in the meal is considered to be a part of the pot. Even if you don't eat it directly with the bread, it's considered to be a part of the meal because these are normal things that you eat during the meal. That means if you're eating kruv and geisa during the meal, those are all part of the normal meal, and they'll be covered by pot. They'll be covered by the bracha on the bread. That's number one. Number two is things shalom machmada suda. What does it mean, lo machmada suda? Things that come not because of the suda. Tosafot defines those as being, like Rashi said before, the last category. Tosafot says that's the second category, things like fruits. Fruits that come in a meal that are not normally eaten as part of a meal, they require a bracha rishona, but not a bracha achrona. So that's, if for instance, when you have fruits in the middle of the meal that's not necessarily connected to the meal as a whole, over there you would have to make a bracha rishona on the fruit, but not a bracha achrona, according to Tosafot. The last category, according to Tosafot, is la'akara suda. He does not change the girsa like Rashi, but rather maintains the girsa and says after the meal. What do you mean after the meal? Of course, if you're after the meal, you have to make a separate bracha. Tosafot says no, that in their day, they used to be what's called moshchem yadehem. They used to finish up the meal, and then they used to eat something else afterwards for dessert. That little piece afterwards that they're eating for dessert after they really pulled away from the meal is what they're called achar suda. It's before you benched, it's before you said birkat hamazon, but it's after they really completed the meal. So that section, or that achar suda, that's what the Gemara says. You need a bracha rishona and achrona, because it's not really included inside of the meal whatsoever, or the birkat hamazon. So it's what it says, we don't have that today. That doesn't exist in our meals today, but in their day they did have such a concept. And that's what the Gemara is referring to. Shalu et ben Zoma, mipnei ma amru dvarim abayim machmat suda b'tocha suda inan turim bracha lo lifneim lo achrayim. Why is it that things that come in the middle of the meal, that are part of the meal, that don't need a bracha rishono or achrona, again, according to Rashi, that means things that are directly connected to the pot. According to Tosafot, it's anything you normally eat in a meal, meat, fish, anything that you would normally have in a meal. Why do they not require bracha? Amalhem, oyo pot potratan. Because the bread that you made the bracha on takes care of all those items. If that's the case, why do you have to make a separate bracha on wine when you're eating a meal with pot with bread in it? Why doesn't the bracha on bread also cover wine? It says, Shani Yayin, wine is different. The goring bracha le'atzmo, it causes its own bracha. Rashi says that it causes its own bracha is because the kamo kotu ba'am rachina lav alfish lo yutsukim lishtiato. Many times we make a bracha on wine even though we didn't want to drink it. Kiddush. Havdalah, it's used in other contexts which give it chashibut, its own standing, independent of its status as a food. And therefore, yayin is so chashub that it cannot be captured by pot. And there then, Tosafot quotes from the Rashbam, the explanation being that all other juices, all other drinks have the same bracha. Borei Pri HaGofen is the anavim, the Borei Pri HaGofen changes into Borei Pri HaGofen. It's an elevation of bracha. And since it has a chashibut and the elevation of the bracha, therefore, it has its own separate bracha, and it cannot be captured by pot. Now, the inyan halacha. So here, with regards to halacha, we hold like Tosafot, which is things that come in the meal that are normally eaten in the meal are covered by the bracha rishona as well as the bracha achrona of the meal. We also paskin that if one makes a bracha ala pot, it covers all food items. If one makes a bracha ala yayin, it covers all drink items when you make a bracha ala yayin, like we said in our Gemara. In addition, when it comes to items that are low machmada suda, according to Tosafot, according to Rashi, that are normally eaten lachara suda, like fruits, there we have a makloket today. So for instance, if that's eaten as an appetizer, fruit or melons that are eaten as an appetizer, that is a makloket apotskim, as to whether, since today those are normal course of what one eats, therefore it should be considered as ptocha suda, or because it's outside of that realm of pot, mizonot, or meat and fish that are in the main center of the meal, you would have to make a separate bracha on them. of Bari Pre'etz or Bari Pre'adamah, depending on what the appetizer was, unless you eat them together with bread. At the same time you're eating them, you also eat bread. The same will be true, and probably even more extreme, on the side of desserts. Desserts, which come after the meal, it's almost muskam l'chol ha'dayot, that if you have a roast, you have fruits at the end, in the dessert of the meal, that there you should make a Bari Pre'etz. It's more questionable when you have issues that are Bari Pre'adamah, or cakes that are mizonot, whether you would have to make a separate bracha. Again, today, where your meal does normally include that, is that considered to be tocha suda or not? That is also a machloket haposkim. Tosafot brings down a machloket between Rashi from the Machzor Vitri, which is miyuchas the Rashi, that says that when you drink water during the meal, you have to make a bracha every time you drink water in the meal. The Ri and the Rabbeinu Tam say, no, you don't have to make any other bracha, because once you made the bracha of Bari Pri'a Gofen, or you made a bracha on the pot, make a bracha on bread, you don't have to cover any other drinks. Drinks are either covered by yayin, Bari Pri'a Gofen, or even if they're not covered by yayin, if you had a bracha on pot, the drinks are included, because every meal includes drinks. So that's considered to be bitocha si'uda. And then Tosafot makes a point about Pesach, a very interesting point. Why don't we make a Bari Pri'adamah on the maror that we eat for Pesach? We make a bracha Bari Pri'adamah earlier on the chazeret that we eat earlier in the Seder, but then we don't make a Bari Pri'adamah on the maror. Tosafot says, don't say to me, because we already made the Bari Pri'adamah earlier, you have the hefsek of the Haggadah in between. That's too long a hefsek, and that Bari Pri'adamah will not cover the Bari Pri'adamah of the maror. So how come we don't make a bracha on Bari Pri'adamah on the maror, even though that's not a part of the suda, it's something that's coming in the beginning? So it says Pesach is unique, because Pesach, it says, Amatzot Omurarim Yochlu. The Torah was koveya that the suda of Pesach includes maror in it, and therefore it turns into item that is considered to be Tocha suda for Pesach. That is Tosafot's approach. Not everybody agrees with Tosafot on this, but I just want to point it out, because it's a very interesting approach of Tosafot to say that maror has a unique status on the night of Pesach, because of the halacha of having al matzot marim yochlu. Okay, we'll stop over here, and we'll continue with the sugya, and we'll discuss part of Abba Kisnim tomorrow.